Hello, everyone, and welcome to the TateCast. My name is Davis Matic. You can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. I am here with what I am comfortable saying is the best episode to date of the show. This interview that I conducted with Keegan Abdu from NFL Next Gen Stats is easily the most informative and most illustrative example of what this podcast is all about learning, about figuring out why things happen. And I really think that all of the listeners to this show will appreciate what Keegan has to say, his path to getting where he is in life. I mean, this dude is a grinder. And honestly, if you have negative feedback to this episode, I would be shocked. If you do like this episode, of course, please leave a rating and review on iTunes. And there's actually a second half of this show that is on the Patreon only. If you want to listen to it, there will be a link to it in the description to the show. Of course, the Patreon exists. You can support at whatever dollar level you want. At the $5 a month level, you get every episode ad-free. You get at least one bonus episode per week. There has been three bonus episodes this week as you are listening. And best of all, you help out your boy. But after a quick advertisement, we are going to get right into the show. Daily Roto is a mostly proud sponsor of the TateCast, a mostly sports podcast. TateCast listeners can save 10% at Daily Roto with the promo code JANIS, J-A-N-I-S. If you are playing on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto will help you improve your daily fantasy results this fall and save time in the process with lineup optimizers, ownership projections, fantasy projections, premium content, and much more. They have all the good stuff that you want to help you make money at sports betting and daily fantasy. Their new lineup optimizer will let you build optimal GPP teams with stacks based on their projections, faster than I can punt money off betting on Peter Uihlein. Sure, you can play the guys that I recommend each week, but shouldn't you also get advice from a proven daily fantasy winner like Drew Dinkmeyer? Yes, I do have better hair than Drew, but I also have his cell phone number, and that makes me a winner almost as much as it makes him a winner of the DraftKings Millionaire Maker. And it's not just fantasy. They have tools to bet on player props, golf matchups, and a customizable NFL game simulator for this fall. Save 10% with promo code JANIS today. All right, everyone, we are joined by a very special guest, Keegan Abdu. From Next Gen NFL Stats. This is a pretty big get because I don't think that you guys at Next Gen, I don't really think you guys do a ton of media appearances.
Yeah, we don't. I definitely had to jump through some hoops, but in the end, they were really conducive to it and just, you know, made sure I was saying the right things and everything and not giving away, you know, trade secrets.
Can't give away the special sauce.
Exactly, but they were my department's awesome, and they gave me a lot of good advice on how to handle it and everything, and we're good. We're here now.
Basically, what we're saying is that Roger Goodell had to sign off on this edition of the TateCast. That's like more or less.
Not quite. I'm not that important, but yeah, sure.
So why football? How did you end up? What's the Keegan story? How'd you end up here? How'd you end up working for Next Gen?
Ever since probably like around fourth grade when I started playing junior football, I was fascinated by the game. I loved it. I was always pretty bad at it, but
sure.
Luckily I was pretty good at math, so I figured probably like in middle school that might be my ticket in. Started doing like studies anytime I could for a school project or whatever. When I was looking at colleges, I actually like would email the coaches and make sure that I could work for the team in some sort of way. At Vanderbilt, I worked in the football office under James Franklin for 2 years. And then I had an internship with the Kraft Sports Group on the marketing side, but I was working in the Patriots Stadium, which was cool. I interned at the NFL League office in the broadcasting department, heading into my senior year of college, which was a really cool, great experience working with ratings and stuff. Got to see how all that and the schedule is made and everything, which is really cool. But you know, I studied econ in college. They didn't have stats. So that was my closest thing. I did a independent study on like Pythagorean win expectations and finding like a gamma value based on season and everything for NFL. But yeah, eventually went to Sloan, the conference a bunch of years. I think I've been 6 years in a row. And 1 year I met a guy who was a Vanderbilt alum who worked for the Browns on the business side. And he said, hey, like forward me your resume. I'll make sure it gets to the right people. And sure enough, in like October, 6 months later, I got an email from the director of pro scouting, and he was like, hey, do you want to be part of this charting project? And I did the testing, got it. I was one of, I don't know how many. It was pretty anonymous. I never even met my boss. It was all remote. But it was really cool. Charted college games and college players. And that's what really started getting me into like the film side of things, which, and it was a great opportunity. And then that summer I was interviewing with the Falcons and also SIS. And the Falcons was kind of like an unsure situation if they were going to offer someone something. So I took the SIS job, which ended up being like the best choice of my life. At SIS, was a video scout for the first 6 months. Charted like 40 hours a week, but tried to get involved in a bunch of other things outside of my responsibilities. Started doing research for the Off the Charts Football podcast with my former boss Matt and Aaron Schatz, and helped with the injury database and maintaining that, and started to learn, teach myself SQL through that, and was able to leverage that hard work into a R&D internship with them, which is great.
Dude, this is such a grind. I'm like just imagining myself doing all of this work, and I'm just like exhausted even just like thinking about it.
Yeah,
I'm 26. How old are you?
I'm 24. So
you've accomplished more, and like you like got more done than in college, and I've like done in my entire life. Like I'm exhausted, like recording like two podcasts in one day. I'm just like, oh, can't even imagine how much work this is.
Yeah, I mean, trust me, there was a lot of procrastinating along the way and everything, but once I got my chance, really with SIS and in an office environment is what allowed me to really take the next step, especially because I was living in Allentown, Pennsylvania, so literally I had nothing else to do but work.
But grind football film.
Yeah, but so that was an awesome experience. Then I saw the Next Gen job posted, and I forgot to add that I worked for Zebra my senior year for Titans home games. So ever since then, which is another job I pretty much got from the Sloan conference. So Sloan is good for networking.
If you want to be working in sports data, that's the place to be, apparently.
It was. I mean, it's definitely blown up a little bit, and I don't know if it's the same as it was at the time. Luckily, I got to go for free for the first few years because I was family friends with a sponsor. But it's been really good to me, and I've been fascinated with like the Zebra data ever since I was logging the on-field events at Titans games. So I started compiling a list of like studies and stuff I'd want to do if I ever got access, and then I saw the job pop up. I'm like, oh, I definitely should apply to this, and they called me back. It was, compared to my interviewing processes with some teams and stuff, it was very quick, to the point, three interviews in 9 days, and the offer was the next week, so that was nice and refreshing. And it was a hard choice to leave SIS, to be honest. I love the people there. It was cool to be part of like a growing small business that had just made a deal with ESPN to give them college data, and
we were partners with Baseball Info Solutions, which I think related. So at Fantasy Insider, four years ago, we were partners with them. They like made like a baseball projection model for us based off all their batted ball stuff.
Yeah. BIS was started in 2003 by John Dewan, who founded Stats Inc. too. He is still the CEO, but they moved in to football and became Sports Info Solutions, so SIS.
Yeah.
In 2015, and they pretty much took over Football Outsiders' external charting operation. But it was really cool to be there for a year and see the product grow and just get a lot better. So it was hard to turn that down, and they offered me like a full-time position, but I had to get a chance to work with this next-gen data. So
yeah,
I took this, it's been incredible.
It's easily the coolest data out right now. Like those play charts that you guys all have access to that you can post on Twitter where it diagrams the play.
It's amazing. I mean, I can't post it on Twitter, but you know, we just got a Twitter account and Mike, they can.
Mike Rank?
Adam Rank.
Adam Rank,
And Nick Shook post them a lot. We send them to the talent and they can post it. And we just got our own Twitter account, so we can post it from there now. But there was a lot of
they're so good. That it like brings me back to like when I remember learning about football when I was like 8 years old, reading like every like book about football that the public had, and just being like mind blown about all of it. And now it's like going through it all again because you could just see everything actually like in a whole different light.
It's the coolest thing ever. And like, yeah, just being able to see that for any play, it's real. And like, one of my favorite things that I've noticed in the play diagrams, especially when you're looking at like the Chiefs or the Rams or something, is like how much like, or even like on the shitty, I love Lamar Jackson, I hate that they're using him that way, but like the plays where he's going in jet motion, like,
yeah,
so you can see on those diagrams that like two or three defenders are getting horizontally displaced, which just turns like an 8-man box into a 6-man box. And it's like, it's really cool to see like the scheme side from that. Or on Drew Brees' touchdown pass the other day, where you can see Josh Norman like vacate his deep third, whether it was a miscommunication or something, but you could definitely tell that the coverage was supposed to be cover three, but Josh Norman jumps on a swing route by Kamara because he goes in motion, and then Traquan Smith is wide open down the sideline.
That's the oldest play in the book. That's the mesh play. You send the flat wide receiver deep and the running back on the wheel route behind him. That play is undefeated. That play is like what I love about football the most. So this is that's a good kicking off point. So of all the proprietary stuff that you guys have at NextGen, kind of what was like the most startling revelation you had where you were like, wow, this is nuts. Like no one else knows this except for the people in this office right here.
Yeah. I guess like I'll start out just by saying like, just it's amazing how vast this data is. Like, and see, like you always think about it like, oh, they have location on every play and like speed on every play. But like seeing like the depth of that, and like, we're really just scratching the surface. We're 3 years in and like, it's just going to keep exploding. And like, we're at the very tip of the iceberg. Like just the untapped potential is awesome.
Right.
And like, I guess like to answer this question, I should probably clarify a little bit like what my role is with NextGen. So like I'm a researcher. So I'm, operating in the dashboards and kind of putting together research notes for NFL Network talent, and then also like our broadcast partners each week on like interesting storylines and stuff. And we're trying to, you know, we're focused on the media side. So it's like, how can we tell this best story that will resonate with a bunch of people?
Right. Yeah.
So like, I often have to be talked down from like doing like really like advanced, like, oh, well, this team, like Todd Gurley in 2016 ran from shotgun this percent of the time, and once McVay took over, they moved him to single back this percent of the time, and he lined up on average this depth from behind, and like he was able to hit the line of scrimmage at like 9 miles per hour instead of like 8 miles per hour, which has led to him being more successful on running the ball. But like, it just gets too in the weeds, and it would never make a TV segment. So like, I need to be talked down to like kind of simplify it. And which is good, because I definitely can get too deep sometimes, which is fun. But for most people and like the purposes of most media, that's counterproductive. But in terms of like introducing these high level ideas and these models, like expected completion percentages and stuff, you need to be able to like explain it in a concise, understandable terms. So it doesn't just like bounce around the analytics Twitter echo chamber that we're in.
People have a real trouble with expected anything. They have trouble with inputs and like what it means. That's true in baseball, basketball, like whatever. Like just in general, when you make it theoretical, when you say like, well, this should happen this percentage of the time, people have real problems with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I came in with a bunch of as I mentioned before, with a bunch of like ideas for studies and stuff, but like that's an off-season task, and like we're getting into the point where like we're grooving the season, and like we're hitting the responsibilities that we have to, where we have time to like write these articles or start coming up with ideas for developing new metrics. But for now, most of it's focused on like the stuff that we have right now and trying to flesh that out. For the actual two models that we have released that our engineers have developed, I think the completion probability model and like the insights from it are really fascinating. And my favorite part might have been just the relationships between each of the features and completion percentage. There was one graph that we had in that, which was a scatter plot of bin scatter plot of distance from the sideline and completion percentage. And it showed that the passes are pretty evenly distributed across the field, but it starts out, I forget exactly where, but like it starts out in the middle of the field and then it actually goes up. So the highest completion, highest likelihood of having a completion is actually around the numbers, which is, I think, an interesting, actually the numbers. It's not the hash, it's not in the middle of the field, but the numbers is where it starts to has this little like increase. And then once you get to about like 5 yards from the sideline, so it's usually like 3 or 4 yards in from the numbers, that's when it starts to just like fall off a cliff.
Those are the worst routes. Those are like comebacks and like hitch routes and stuff. Like those are very inefficient routes.
And it was interesting to see, I created some automated passing heat maps when I was at SIS, just based on like our general location of targets. And I was looking at the top 5 quarterbacks in this year's draft and looking at their different distributions, and like Josh Allen threw 53% of his passes outside the numbers.
Yeah,
which is just like it kind of contextualizes like maybe it's him, maybe it's the offense, but they were asking him to do a lot harder and less efficient throws, which I thought was an interesting development, especially once I got this information as well. Like you can find all those charts in the article, but I thought those were some of the most interesting stuff from that. And another thing that we didn't release, but I just wanted to touch on real quick, is that you would think that there's like a pretty high that air yards and target separation are pretty related, like because of all these dump offs and stuff. They're not. No. Like it's more of like a L-shaped distribution with like a little hump in the middle. It's almost like, I don't know, like an arrowhead that's pointing towards zero, and you have like the little stem of it coming out. It's like it's a very weird distribution that's not linear at all, and it's definitely not like what you would expect.
Well, the top 5 in guys in that cushion like at the catch point, it's an amazing list. The top 5 are Kiki Cutie, Jakeem Grant,
my boy,
Dede Westbrook, and then it's Jeff Swaim and Austin Hooper. Which like, you're like, what are these? And then like the next 8 names on the list are tight ends too, which actually to me says it's like a scheme thing. Like those guys are only getting targets when like they're like straight up uncovered or the play has moved them to where no one is even around them at all. Whereas Westbrook, Cutie, those guys are creating the separation themselves.
And something I have looked at in terms of like Dak and like how he threw a lot of tight window throws last year, and like how losing Dez Bryant and Jason Witten might change that for the better or for worse. Was it like, if you're like, there's definitely a positional thing where passes to running backs have the lowest tight window throw percent and the highest separation, and then it goes tight ends and then it goes receivers, which makes intuitive sense. But yeah, that kind of goes with what you were saying. And then I think my favorite observation that came out of the XCOM stuff was something my coworker Mike Band tweeted about. He noticed that the average open throw percent, which is when a receiver has over 3 yards of separation, has steadily increased over the past 3 years from 36.6% to 38.7% to 42.2%. The tight window throw percent, which is less than 1 yard of separation, has steadily decreased from 19.3% to 17.6% to 15.7%. And as a result, you can see this in the expected completion percentage at the NFL average is risen by about an insane 2 percentage points per year. So it was 61.3 in 2016, 63.9 in 2017, and 65.5 this year so far. But that was like a few weeks ago. But yeah, even still.
What is your conclusion from that? Is it the rule change? Is it play callers getting better? Quarterbacks?
I think it's play callers. I think there's been an explosion in these, you know, motions and spread concepts and RPOs where, like the completion percentage on like a scale from 1970 now is like broken. It's like just keeps, it rises every year. And what's really cool about this is it contextualizes it. It's not just people who are performing better, it's just they're making easier throws. Like the air yards goes down. The air yards actually, I think, stays pretty stable. But like they're throwing it, they're scheming guys open more. And I think that one thing that one interesting development of the past few years compared to like the decade beforehand is that I think quarterbacks are inherently less risky at the top of the draft now because coaches aren't trying to fit them into a square hole and they're borrowing a bunch of college concepts. Right, trying to make
them like, oh, this quarterback has to run my plays. If they don't run my plays, then I'm just going to chuck them aside for some vet.
Yeah. It's like, what if Mike Vick was drafted in today's day and age instead of back then when they were trying to fit him into West Coast offense? Like, it's interesting to see, for sure.
Vick was good. West Coast offense actually kind of fits his style all right, because it gets him on the move a lot, and he wasn't like hyper accurate or anything.
Yeah, I was thinking of more like how he excelled once he got Morning Wag in like 2010, and compared to like his earlier coaches who just like were trying to, they weren't really taking advantage of his athleticism as much as maybe they could have.
Yeah, for sure. So that kind of caps off the expected completion. Another thing that you guys have out there is expected yards after the catch. And that's like really interesting to me because I got my start and all of this fantasy stuff really looking at wide receivers and just like having like very strong opinions as to like what kind of wide receivers add value to the NFL teams. Because people think of like, oh, running backs either are really good or they just get what are blocked. And then they don't think about wide receivers that way. Like, it is kind of hard to be a bad slot wide receiver, right? Because you're pretty much always going to be uncovered at the catch point. Now,
and you get cushion, you get free releases, which is something that Matt Harmon has been harking on for the past year. It's like moving guys that maybe can't succeed on the outside anymore, like the Larry Fitzgerald, is an interesting way to continue a guy's career in the slot too.
Yeah, like Julian Edelman, like how often does he have someone within 3 yards of him at the line of scrimmage? Like never.
Never. I mean, you look at the press percentages on the outside corners compared to inside corners, and it's like
so my thought was that this is like a good way to measure wide receiver effectiveness. If there are guys who consistently are able to beat their expected yards after the catch, that has to be the mark of like, and I'm sure this has usefulness for outside guys too, but like specifically my thought was this is a very good way to evaluate explosive, like good slot wide receivers. What is your conclusion, Ben? And what is your thought on how to use this best to evaluate player talent?
I can touch a little bit on the stuff we've gotten from the expected yak model. I would like to dive a little bit into like how we make the juice a little bit. But yeah, so like Mike, who I mentioned earlier, Mike Band, he came up with this great idea of a yak success rate. So it's basically like, given your expected yak, how often are you outperforming it? If you look at the leaderboards for high volume guys last year, like again, it makes a lot of sense. It's your slot guys show up, you know, Golden Tate's up there, Jarvis Landry's up there, Kamara's up there. But what was really interesting is there were some tight ends up there too. So Gronk was number one, Kelsey was in the top 10. So like these super athletic tight ends that also motion out in the slot pretty often.
Yeah.
Also show a consistent ability to beat their expectation. Do you want me to like kind of explain to
explain the formula.
So I guess like maybe a good place to start is like with how we create completion probability. There's an article out there, but basically like what we do is we take all these different factors and the model runs over and over in machine learning. Basically, I'm probably doing not the best job of explaining it, but basically randomly splits on different variables and then finds out which variables lead to making the biggest distinctions between passes, and the same kind of mechanisms are going into the XYAC model. And basically for the completion probability model, we take 36,000 pass attempts that were over the 2016 and 2017 seasons. That's every pass attempt. That wasn't a throwaway or spike. And 70% of that data is used in that process I just mentioned, where it trains the model in that process I just described. And then 20% is used to validate it, and then 10% is used to test. And so for the completion probability model, we got an R squared of in the testing phase of 0.98, which is like absurd.
Yeah, that's really high.
That was super cool that like, given all these factors on a play, you could say with a lot of certainty whether the likelihood of the completion being actually completed, which I thought was really cool. And then for XYAC, it's a little bit more complicated because it's not just like a probability of it happening. You're kind of trying to find, given all these different factors on the field, given like, so receiver speed and acceleration, how many teammates are around him and their separation from him, how many defenders are around him and their separation and their speeds and their accelerations and the direction that they're moving. So that's all put into the model. But one thing that we did find is that yards gained before closing, and closing is defined as the moment that a defender closes their separation to the ball carrier within 1 yard, is a pretty good predictor of yak, which makes a lot of sense. The R squared on those two were 0.64. So that's still really good. It's not 0.98, but you don't want it to be for something like yak, because what we're really doing here is like, you can think of closing as like a tackle opportunity. Basically the players are going to outperform that yards gained before closing, because those are the times that they break a tackle and make an exceptional play. But when they get tackled, like it's a pretty, like at that closing point, it's a pretty good predictor. So basically what we do is we first build a model to predict the yards gained before closing. And then we use that to inform the expected yards after catch. And one interesting insight that I don't know if it's going to make the article, but like direction wise. We basically look at it. If the receiver is going straight downfield, it's a 0 degree direction. Mm-hmm. He's going back towards his own end zone, it's 180 degrees. And then it goes all the way around to 360 is also going right toward the end zone.
Sure.
So like, the highest yak is like kind of when they're at like a 30 or 330 degree angle. So like they're towards the end zone, but it's not like a 45-degree angle where it's completely horizontal.
Yeah, they're running. They're running the slant.
But yeah, those slants and those posts, exactly. And like figuring out what kind of that's a relationship that I definitely want to dive into further. But yeah, one more essential part of the expected yak model is this idea of open space. So pretty much the direction that a receiver is traveling in when they gain possession of the ball. If you look in at 85-degree angle on both sides, and you pretty much cut it off so open space is only upfield. You basically what we do there is we count the number of defenders, the number of teammates, the locations, speeds and accelerations of those teammates, and how close their average separation is and the closest separation and everything. And that's all thrown into the model, and that helps us get to this expected yak, which I think is really interesting.
So those are the two, expected completion and expected yak. Like that's been tackled. The machine learning has been done. You guys are doing the articles. Those are there. If you're listening to this, you can go to Next Gen Stats and you can go find that right now. So what is an area of the game that you guys have not yet fully done the machine learning on or player tracking that you guys want to get to, like the next couple of things that you guys are studying or researching at the Next Gen office?
Yeah. So what we're working on next is the engineering team is working on a expected rushing yards model. So that's kind of got similar mechanisms to the expected yards after catch model.
Right.
And then definitely just other areas of the game that we can create expectations or probabilities for. Like that's what we're going to be focused on in the off season. And like, maybe it's from a defensive coverage standpoint or something like that. Or that's the kind of stuff that I think is going to be really revolutionary and cool. And like combining those models into like a bigger model that kind of maybe explains, I don't know, like how a quarterback distributes the ball or whatever. Like that's the kind of stuff that I think these are just like the first steps in like a big process of like really making some cool insight about the game. And pretty much like what these are going to help us do is help understand division of credit better, which I think
which is what people always say. That's like, that's always the argument, right? Is that, well, you can't know why so-and-so is, you can't distribute, oh, this team is good because of this quarterback or because of this wide receiver or because of this running back. That's the problem with football analytics.
Right? Yeah. And I mean, division of credit, I mean, there's been some great work on division of credit and some people have their reservations, which are valid, but like Ron Yurko's war model, splitting it up into air yards and yak and rushing for quarterbacks. Like, I think that's pretty cool. When I was at SIS, we were working on our total points model, which is like a EPA player EPA model that is a bunch of division of credit, taking a bunch of like scheme data and stuff like that. And like specifically with yards after the catch, like we ended up deciding to split it pretty evenly between the quarterback and the receiver up to the point of first contact. And the reason that we made that decision, I made a push for that, was that have you ever heard of Bill Walsh's theory of yak?
No, rack, but I love anything Bill Walsh has to say.
Yeah. So I found out about this in Jaws' book, The Seven Games That Changed the Game, which is an awesome read. Definitely recommend it from like a scheme standpoint.
I'm in. Yeah.
But it's basically that yards after catch can be explained by receiver separation plus quarterback accuracy. So as soon as I read that, I was like, all right, like this is Next Gen. Like let's, and then obviously when I came here, there already had almost completed a model like this, but it's cool to see that everyone's on the same page. But PFF did some interesting stuff with like their advanced ball accuracy stuff that showed when like a ball was on frame compared to behind, compared to like a perfect pass. Like the yak had like a pretty linear relationship with the accuracy of the ball. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And like how that relates to the X-Yak model. I think a good way in my interpretation of it is that the area from the moment of the catch to the expected tackle opportunity or the expected yards gained before closing location, that's like the muddled division of credit. The quarterback's accuracy helps maintain the speed and acceleration of the receiver. The route concept and the quarterback's like ability to read and go through his progressions determines how much open space the receiver has, and a receiver's route running ability obviously has a huge effect on how much separation they have. But yards gained after that tackle opportunity, or at SIS, the way we did it is we pretty much would look at the expected yak given a route and a coverage and a air yards. And what we would do there is pretty much up to the point of contact, we'd split the it pretty evenly, but after the point of contact is when you give most of that expected points added to the receiver. So like that's kind of like a division credit. We're getting there. We're certainly not 100% there yet, but I think it's
that's the Lord's work.
Promising, and that's the that holy
is really
grail.
Promising. It's really promising. Yeah, it's really promising to know that stuff is being worked on by very capable people. Do you have a sense of if NFL teams already have this stuff in motion or have a way to evaluate this stuff that's even further along than what you guys have in the league office?
Yeah. So I know a bunch of people on some teams and have some good relationships with them, and pretty much they just got the full data that was in their own team this year. Starting this season.
That's amazing. So like, it's amazing that it would not be until this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's competition committee stuff. There's some owners that might not want to, have to invest a lot of resources in it and think that it can get into an arms race situation.
I didn't think that was what you were going to say. I thought you were going to say there was going to be some owners who would not want to share their data. The idea that there are NFL teams that are like, oh, we don't want to spend the money on this is the most absurd.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. But like, there's also the NFL is like, it's a very, they value the way that things are, and they don't want to mess that up unless it's like proven. So everything needs to go through trial runs. Everything has to have very high standards and everything. So it makes sense a little bit on like the delay angle on that end, for me at least. But I know that from talking to people in the league, like they pretty much said like 2-3 years from now, every analytics department is going to double in size. They're going to need people to deal with this massive data. I haven't talked to any guys that I know this season much because they're in season and they're super busy.
Yeah.
But I'm sure they're doing some pretty interesting stuff with it. And it, you know, connecting that with charting data or whatever, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of edges that smart teams can use this for. And I'm excited, hopefully, to get in on that side at one point and see what I can do with that. But yeah.
So if you were, say, some of the analytically inclined teams are like, all right, we're going to go send a bunch of our quality control coaches to the next gen stats office. Like Belichick's not coming, McVay's not coming, but they're sending, you know, their most favorite offensive quality control coach. And you get these guys in a room, and you have ten coaches in there, and you have 15 minutes to really break down what you think is most important and what these teams need to know. What does your presentation include? What are you trying to send them back to the head coaches with?
I'm showing them pretty much like the tools that we have built for them in a way that can really reduce their scouting. You can select all these different variables by like formation, by which guys went in motion, which players were on the field together, like that kind of stuff. And I think that could help them with tendency scouting, with opponent scouting, and cut down a lot of time so that they can actually focus on analyzing this data themselves. Because you know, I'm still like relatively new with this, so I don't know if I'm exactly in the most qualified thing to be like, these are the things that you need to look right. at. But like, I think that's a great start. And then like, I think there's so many cool ideas, especially like, there's so many cool ideas on what we can glean from this. Like one of my favorites is the whole play action and just rushing effects play action debate, which is a fun one. But I want to personally study like the horizontal or the vertical displacement of linebackers when there is play action on a play, or and how yeah. like long they're delayed and stuff. And like, if you can quantify that even more and like, listen, these linebackers are literally moving. It's not just like these EPA models that are showing that play action is just so much more effective and has nothing to do with how effective you run the ball or how often you run the ball. I think that would go a long way in, you know, moving the NFL average of play action from like 21% to like 35% or something like that. When you can actually show them with like the diagrams or something, like this is how you're displacing these guys.
I think that actually would make way much. I think that would make much more sense to like NFL people is to show them the diagram as opposed to just showing them the numbers. That's like when I talk to some coordinators and like baseball players, like these athletes, they really like to see it in like a lot of them seem to be like visual learners in the sense that they want to see
that it. Makes complete sense.
Yeah. And so they're not, so I don't even know what the type of learning would be where you just get the information from like, from just like seeing the data in black and white like that. But yeah, it seems to me that a lot of these people involved in coaching and in playing sports, they're like visual learners. And so being able to show them the diagram, I think that's like, when we get there, that's a real tool to, I think, seeing more efficient play on the field. Cause I think it would make more sense to them.
Yeah. And like, you know, show them the value that this can bring. I completely agree. And I think that there's a lot of young, innovative minds that are penetrating the game right now and the industry. And it's pretty exciting. It's an exciting time, especially this year with the explosion of offense and everything.
So great. Okay, so we're going to do one more topic before we go behind the paywall over to the Patreon. Keegan actually did some original research on spread and empty formations that we're going to be talking about over on the Patreon. But before we get there, so all of this conversation we've had, it's very high level. This is about the future of the game. This is about coaches. This is about offensive coordinators. But most of the people listening to this, I assume, are probably not coaches. They're probably just dudes who like football. They like to play fantasy football. So in terms of like fantasy football or forecasting games, what value do you think right now that Next Gen Stats are adding for prognosticating these games? And do you see a way that they're not being used yet, but that they could be added into all of these projection models that people have?
Yeah, so like for my department, as I said earlier, like our focus is to like explain the game better and learn more about the game and in turn like teach our fans more about the game. It's definitely not from like a prediction or fantasy standpoint, but we do have guys like Graham Barfield who just started, who's awesome. And he's loves our stuff and incorporates it into almost all of his articles. I think it's a great way to start understanding some nuances of some matchups a little bit more. And I know that your previous guest might not.
Defenses don't matter.
Defenses don't matter in terms in fine print when it comes to prognosticating fantasy production. But maybe I think he said, and Josh, me and Josh talk all the time. He's a great guy. But I think he's said and clarified that he just doesn't think the tools that we have to evaluate defense right now are that informative, and that might be why there is no signal. And I think that there's definitely potential for better and more predictive ways to look at defense.
Something
in the future,
we're just
not focused on it personally.
Something I would like to see is if like there's a defensive skill in limiting expected yards after catch. Like if there's a year over year Like if a defensive coordinator of every year, his defense is top five and limiting expected yards after the catch. Like, I think that's something that has the ability to be like mega predictive.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And I think scheme plays such a role. And you know, we're working on route classification and coverage classification right now. And also play, like play similarity. But as of right now, we're not there yet. That's also using like machine learning models and everything. But there are charting organizations like SIS or PFF that do have that data and are looking at scheme, maybe not from the fantasy perspective, but just from like a effectiveness perspective. Like I know the Off the Charts Football podcast has been really great this season in terms of looking at like which traditional coverage three beater routes are the most effective from an EPA standpoint and from a success rate standpoint. Like, so like there's definitely some people that are doing some cool scheme stuff on how these are, which ones are the most effective. And then like, I think that can extend kind of like with the whole thing about the Falcons from like a fantasy perspective. The Falcons defense is like a cover three, and do cover threes like funnel, is it not a specific defense thing, but do cover threes and a specific ways of running the cover three, like give up those passes to running backs in order to, because they think that they can limit the yak there with fast linebackers. Unfortunately, Deion Jones is hurt right now, but like that seems to be like their philosophy and stuff like that.
There we go. Perfect. I think that's a great way to end this version of the podcast. If this conversation was interesting to you, we are going to continue it. Literally taking you behind the curtain, I'm going to stop this recording and then start it again. And we're going to go over and we're going to talk about some sports info solution stuff.